doesn't take a genius to see that we're living in turbulent times. Economically turbulent, socially turbulent. Our future is really unclear for so many people. And as a result, a lot of us experience pain in our lives. And a few of us experience tremendous pleasure, the pleasure that comes from being on the cutting edge, the pleasure that comes from being in control instead of in reaction, the pleasure that comes from predicting instead of reacting. What am I specifically talking about? I'm talking about the fact that all of us are always looking for the edge in life. We're looking for something that's going to help us to win, to go to the next level, to grow, to expand, to have a competitive advantage in business, to really direct our lives. And you know what? Whenever I meet people that are extremely successful, I'm always asking that question. What is the difference in this person? What makes them so much more effective than other people? And as you can guess, there isn't any one skill that makes people more effective. Certainly there is a consistent commitment in these people to constantly and never-endingly improve their life. But you know what? The discipline of kanai, constant never-ending improvement, is not the only common denominator that I find. There is another consistent factor or skill that every one of these winners seems to share in common, whether this person be a peak performer in business, the best at what they do, or somebody who really knows how to make their relationship be passionate consistently, or someone who's a great parent, or whether it's a company on the cutting edge. I can tell you the common denominator is the ability to consistently anticipate change before it occurs. You know what? This skill can take stress out of your life, and this skill can make you incredibly successful. It can make you wealthy in financial terms. It can make you wealthy in emotional terms. It can take away fear. The power to anticipate is the power to shape the direction of your life and all those you care about. It could be argued that anticipation is the ultimate advantage. Why? Because ultimately in your life, it will be very easy to define the level of your success by one simple ability. Your ability to solve problems from the most intense, incredible, profound to the most ridiculous and simple. This really defines how your life turns out. Because on a natural flow, without a problem, without a challenge, everything seems to be fine. It's when these problems show up. Your level of success is how quickly, how easily, how elegantly can you solve these problems, these challenges, these things that get in the way of your being able to do what you want the moment you want to do it. Now, what's the challenge then? The challenge is most of us, when we get into a problem, find ourselves immersed, and we find ourselves in reaction to a problem. It's happening right now. We're trying to solve it. We feel stressed. Who are the leaders in industry? Who are the leaders in nations? Who are the leaders in anything? The people who anticipate a problem before it even shows up, and they solve it before it even happens. That's what the word anticipate means. It means to foresee and deal with in advance. And I can tell you one thing. This skill will give you more joy in your life than almost anything else I can imagine, other than learning to manage your own emotional state. And even that requires some anticipation, knowing the kinds of environments that might stimulate you to go into a lousy state and dealing with it in advance. What you're doing when you're anticipating is you're utilizing the capacity to step beyond the present moment and utilize the future as your leverage. I read an article in Forbes magazine where they were interviewing some of the employees who were asking the new chairman of the board of General Electric how he could let them go. How come I was good yesterday, one man said, but I'm not worthwhile today? And he said, listen, it's not you're not worthwhile. He said, you just got to know something. What you're doing is no longer competitive. He said, you know, when Roger Bannister broke the four-minute mile, that was really powerful. But today, kids in high school run four-minute miles. We can't live on yesterday's standards and expect to be the winner today. We've got to anticipate what are the standards of tomorrow and how do we create those standards right now. That's how we win the game of life. You watch in sports. The power of anticipation in sports is the difference between somebody who's a Hall of Famer in something, somebody who's a superstar, and somebody who's mediocre. See, it's anticipation that makes a Wayne Gretzky. When they asked him again, I've used this example before, you're not the tallest, you're not the strongest, you're not the fastest. How come you're so great? How come you're so successful? His answer is, well, I think most people usually skate to where the puck is. I skate to where the puck is going. You watch a great basketball player and they make the pass. They don't pass to where the person is. You pass to where the person's going. If you pass to where they are right now, you're going to miss them. The same thing is true in life. It's true in relationship. It's true in business. We've got to be able to anticipate where everybody's going around us so we can meet their needs. If we meet people's needs, they're going to feel fulfilled. We're going to strengthen our relationships. We're going to add more value and we're going to succeed. This is one of the simplest secrets to life and it's one we've got to apply daily. And I want to sell you on making this one of the most highly valued criteria in your life. I want to sell you on that this is a skill that this is not just intuition or getting lucky, and some people are able to anticipate and some people aren't, or it's something you can't do because it's too complex and the world's changing too fast. Garbage. I want to demystify this process for you because it is a process. Anticipating is a process, and not anticipating is the result of your own conditioning. Because that's the obvious question. It must be coming up in your head. And you say, okay, Tony, well, there are a lot of things I can anticipate, but I don't. So why don't I? Because you get caught up in patterns. We all do, don't we? Patterns of perception. In fact, there's a word that we hear a lot in business these days. It's becoming the hot word to talk about. It's the word paradigm. What is a paradigm? A paradigm is nothing but an accepted way of thinking. A way of thinking that everyone seems to accept that goes unquestioned through time. In other words, it's a shared set of assumptions. An example of a paradigm that we all studied in history was the paradigm that the world is flat. Everyone assumed that the world was flat. There was no real absolute proof, but everyone accepted that way of thinking. It wasn't until a paradigm shifter, a guy named Columbus, came along, was willing to test those rules, test those barriers. And by the way, that's another way of describing a paradigm. A paradigm is a set of barriers, a set of rules about how to interpret the world, about what can and cannot happen, what will and will not happen. Now, you and I have spent some time in the past talking about belief systems. And certainly you might say, well, how is a paradigm different than a belief? Well, a paradigm is really a system of evaluating many areas of your life. You may utilize many different beliefs in order to make a decision on a consistent basis. That may make up your paradigm. In other words, your paradigm may be made up of many different beliefs. Now, rather than getting all caught up in this word, let's simplify it. A paradigm is a set of rules, a set of assumptions, a set of barriers that control how you perceive your life, what you think is possible or impossible, what you can and cannot do, what others will or will not do. Another simple way of looking at paradigms is to think of it in metaphorical terms as if it were a game. See, we all have games that we've played, and games are paradigms. What is a game? There is a goal. There are a set of rules of what you can and cannot do in order to achieve that goal. In order to achieve that goal, what do you got to do? You got to solve a series of problems based on the rules of the game. Well, in your life, you've got this game called life worked out. You may think this game is a game of respect. You may think this game is a game of competition. You may think this game is a game of being a victim. I doubt if the latter example fits you. Probably the former do or something else. But the point of the matter is, you have an idea what life's about, what you can and cannot do, what other people can and cannot do, and you've got certain rules and barriers that guide the whole process. And along the way, you're going to be solving problems based upon your beliefs, your paradigms of how life really is. A good example of this metaphorically, again, would be like playing tennis. Tennis is a paradigm. It's a game with a set of goals. There are specific rules of how to do it, and it's your ability to solve problems that allows you to win the game of tennis. What happens? Your opponent hits the ball into your court, and it gives you a certain level of problem. And what you've got to do is you've got to address it. But you've got to solve the problem of getting this from your court over into their court using only the rules of the game of tennis. You can't use a baseball bat, right? You can't catch it with your hand and throw it back over there. You've got to use those specific rules. And they limit the way you play the game, don't they? Just like your paradigms about relationship or your paradigms about business or your paradigms about yourself control and direct what you are allowing yourself to do to solve problems or to produce results. Now, what's really neat is if you solve your problem, what you do is you deliver your problem to the other side of the court and you give your partner there a problem. And then he has to solve his problem of getting the ball out of his side of the court and into yours, again, using those same rules. And what happens is we keep trading problems back and forth until one of us is able to deliver a problem so big to the other person they can't deal with it anymore and we win. Now, what's interesting is this idea can really help you understand the concept of paradigm. And I can promise you, if you're in the business community, you probably already heard the term or you're about to, and the general public as well is going to start reading about it in newspapers because the rate of change is no longer minor changes like just reinforcement or just a little small improvement. Overnight, industries are disappearing, and they're disappearing because they're not anticipating a paradigm shift, a wholesale change in the rules of the game. It'd be like if we said we're going to play tennis now, and now when you play tennis, you catch the ball and you throw it at the other person, and if you hit them, now you're successful at the game of tennis. Those are the kinds of shifts that are happening. They're radical, and we've seen them in virtually every area of our society, from relationships to business to the way we look at our own government. The rules of the game for the media have changed. The rules of the game for virtually every aspect of society not only have changed, but continue to change so rapidly few people can keep up. But in our society, you must keep up. And let me tell you the good news. There are only a certain areas of life you have to focus on to really have the edge. And we're going to discuss a few of these here. And by the way, if there wasn't this incredible push of change in our society, we wouldn't be living in the exciting times we're in. You go, yeah, it doesn't feel very exciting to me right now, Tony. I'm going through some tough times. Yeah, but you know what? as bad as it feels right now, it's going to push you to another level. What do we really need then to master this principle of anticipation? What do we need to do so we can utilize paradigm shifts to our advantage? The first thing we've got to do is adopt a new belief system. And that belief system is not only is change inevitable, but it is our advantage. The status quo is not to your advantage unless you're already on top and have mastered it for decades. Now, if you're one of those people, let me tell you your advantage. You're going to have to grow, which will make you happy, because you're not going to be happy just sitting on top doing nothing. But for most people in life, they're still pursuing a way to become better, more successful. And if the rules of the game are changing, it means, guess what? You are on an equal playing field with almost anybody else. And you say, well, that doesn't feel very good. I don't like thinking about everything I've done that works, you know, may just go out the door tomorrow. I'm not saying it will. I'm saying it may, and you've got to be prepared for that. You can't be thinking because you're the best at what you do, you're always going to be the best at what you do just by making incremental improvements. I was reading in Joel Barker's book, The History and the Decline of the Swiss Watch Manufacturers. I mean, back in 1968, when you thought of a Swiss watch, what'd you think of? Best in the world. They were the best. In fact, they manufactured 65% of all the watches made in the world. They had 90% of the profits in the world, most people say. Are they the number one manufacturer today? Do you go out and ask for a Swiss watch when you go out there now? Probably not. You know why? They control only 10% of the market. The Japanese control 35%. And you know what's interesting? Was that because they didn't practice Kanai? No, they did. As much as I've promoted Kanai to you, that is only one principle. You've got to do more than just constantly improve. You've got to practice Kanai at the level of anticipation. You've got to constantly and never-endingly improve your ability to anticipate major change. You've got to be able to innovate, not just improve. And you know what? These people constantly improve their watches. The Swiss are the ones who created the minute hand. And then the second hand, they developed the best gear system in the world for a watch. They created digital technology. But when they looked at it, they said, it doesn't have any gears in it. Nobody's going to want this. So they sold it to the Japanese, to a company called Seiko. I bet you've heard of them, haven't you? Think about it. That's called a paradigm shift, where the rules of the game changed overnight. The rules of the game changed, the barriers changed, the approach changed, and you know what? There are brand new winners, and the people that used to be winners are now losers. This is very good news for you, because it means if you stay on the cutting edge, if you anticipate, there's always a way for you to make your fortune. There's always a way for you to be at the cutting edge. There's always a way to turn your company or your career in a whole new direction. But you've got to operate from this principle that says just because it's worked up until now and because it's made me successful doesn't mean it will tomorrow. This is so critical. I'm sure you read the book In Search of Excellence, right? It was a number one bestseller for years and years. That book reported on 43 of the best-run companies in America. But you know something? 14 of those 43 were in financial trouble within 2 years after that book was written. And you know what? Business Week did a study on them, and they said they all had one thing in common. They all failed to react and respond to changes. That's how they went from being the model company to the companies that were in financial ruin. And I might say, well, Tony, I don't run a company. I don't own my own company. You're not even talking to me. Yes, I am. Because you know what? Those companies are nothing but a metaphor for your own life, for our own society. They're a reflection of the level of change. Listen, back in 1970, a little more than 20 years ago, CBS was really having a tough time making a decision on whether they're going to put a show on the air or not. And they were really concerned about it. It was going really against the values of the day. You know what that show was? Mary Tyler Moore. Mary Tyler Moore show. Can you imagine why? Because she was a divorcee. Ooh. The truth is, that's one of the places that values originally get shifted. When mass number of people see a rule change on television and they grow to like that character, they very often will adopt similar changes in their rules. I'm not saying it was right. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying we have to look at the consequences and know that they're there. 20 years ago, that was one of the changes that happened. And now look what we've got. Look at the changes in the paradigm of what can be said on the radio. What's said on television? The type and quality of language. The type and quality of images. Are those changing the rules of our society? You better believe it. Are they changing the rules of what's acceptable and unacceptable? You better believe it. Are those rule changes taking us in the direction we want to go? I guess that's everyone's individual decision to make. But you got to know that they're changing. And you got to know that those changes that we're seeing happening in society are affecting your personal life. They're affecting the person you're sitting across the table with for dinner, who you're hoping to go out with, and how they're going to look at a relationship with you. They're going to determine the kind of relationship you're going to have with this person 20 years from now, because I can virtually guarantee you it's not going to be the same as it is today. Because the roles and the rules are going to continue to change and expand. this two-income household that we've adopted, right, wrong, or indifferent. That rule change, that was a paradigm shift. What has it done? It's changed the expectations of both parties. It's added tremendous stress on both parties, right, wrong, or indifferent. It's changed the structure of how our children are raised. And this is changing the direction of society as a whole. Paradigm shifts are things you must study. You must be aware of. You cannot afford to say ignorance is bliss. No, ignorance is poverty. Ignorance equals unemployment. See, a lot of people are unemployed because they couldn't see their own industry coming to the end because they're so busy just making a living instead of designing a life. We've got to anticipate. So I keep saying this to you again and again and again. So Robin, you go, stop it. How do I anticipate? Good question. Let me give you five simplistic approaches to help you avoid the trap of being caught up in your own paradigm. Then let me offer you the psychology of how human behavior becomes patterned. That is how we create trends, because we all know if we can anticipate certain trends, not just follow a trend, but anticipate it, we can avoid certain pains in our lives because we're prepared for it. And we can also experience pleasure because we can anticipate it and take advantage of the situation. Now, here's the first thing that can help you avoid the trap of being caught up in your own paradigm. Beware the unquestioned conviction. What do I mean by that? Well, you know, a belief is nothing but a feeling of certainty about what something means. So you feel certain your spouse is happy. You feel certain your kids are in great shape. You feel certain that your job will always be there, right? Nothing wrong with that. But when you get a conviction, it means you feel so certain about something and you're so invested in believing in something that you're not willing to take any new input. You're not willing to question, even for a moment, hey, is there any possibility that your current job may not be here 5 years from now because a radical new technology or a radical new change in the marketplace's desires could wipe it out? If you're not willing to look at the possibility that your children may not be as good off as you think for the moment, your ego gets in the way or your conviction that they're perfect gets in the way, then you can't create the changes you're committed to. You can't improve anything. We've got to be aware of these. Whenever you start saying this is the only way, you may be right. But stop and say, what if there was another way? What would it be? Or when you start saying something is impossible, ooh, I'd be real careful on that one. Because what was impossible yesterday is probable today. That's the pace of change we're in. So start thinking. Start being aware of your convictions. And when you start feeling there's only one way to do something, break out and at least consider another possibility. That'll help you avoid getting caught up in your own trap. Second, make sure you develop a new belief system, one you create certainty about. And the one thing you can be certain about is that change is certain. If you want to get certain about something, be certain that change is coming, and then you'll always be anticipating it. You won't be reacting to it. I remember years ago, a good friend of mine, Bob Bays, used to tell me, I only feel certain about one thing in life, and I'm certain that things will change. And I thought, well, with that sense of certainty, I guess you're never surprised by anything. He said, no, and he also is one of the most balanced people I know. Change doesn't bother him like it bothers other people. For most people, it's not the change that bothers them so much. It's the fact that they're not ready for the change. They're not anticipating the change. It's like a giant pattern erupt. It smacks them, and they're not prepared for it. They don't know how to deal with it. The third key is this. Break your pattern of thinking in a linear fashion. This is what keeps you from getting what you want. We all get trapped thinking, oh, tomorrow, I know what tomorrow's going to be like. Let me look at today's sky. The sky looks really good. It's not going to rain tomorrow. It sure as heck does. Or you know what? You know, the last 2 months have been great weather. That doesn't mean tomorrow's going to be great weather. Or today is lousy weather. Doesn't mean tomorrow's going to be lousy. That's what happens in stock markets. People say, wow, look at the market. It's been going up and up and up. I better jump on. That's not the way to evaluate. You're thinking in a linear fashion. And if, well, you know what? It's a great way to get yourself killed financially. I've seen it happen to so many people. Does this happen emotionally? Yeah. Hey, my relationship's been great up until now. It's been great for the last 6 years. Doesn't mean it's going to be great tomorrow if you don't find a way to make it better. You can't assume that the status quo will remain. In fact, if there's anything you can assume, it's that it's going to be broken up, that something is going to challenge the status quo. If it doesn't change it, at least it's going to challenge it. And you want to be aware of it. So one of the ways you can change your life is don't think in this linear fashion. Maybe you want to start thinking in a cyclical fashion. Throughout human history, certain things keep coming up just like seasons. You know, when you're in the middle of fall and the weather's really nice, instantaneously, overnight, the next day, it can be winter. And if you don't have a thing called a calendar, which helps you to anticipate this, and you're thinking linear the last 2 or 3 weeks or months, you're going to be taken by surprise, and you're either going to be uncomfortable or you're going to freeze to death. But on the other hand, if you thought in a cyclical fashion, you'd say, hey, things are going really great right now in my business. Things are going really great in my relationship right now. Guess what? There will be challenging times. That's not being a negative thinker. Winters do come. Let me right now figure out what I'm going to do so when winter comes here, I can ski. When winter comes here, I can make it even better. So when the challenging times show up in my business, I'm prepared. This is the thing that most people don't do. Think cyclically versus linearly. Think as an innovator. Think the unthinkable thought. And how do you do that? Go to step four. Ask questions no one else has the courage to ask. Ask questions no one else is asking about your industry. Ask yourself questions about yourself. It's so easy to get caught up and not want to look at yourself with a more critical eye. But if you were to raise your standards, if you were to raise standards for what your business needs to do for your customer, if you were to raise your standards for what do you need to do to make your husband or wife feel more loved than ever before, or your significant other, depending upon your current level of relationship, if you were to raise your standards for what you need to do to make sure your children are really getting the education they need, are really feeling loved the way they need to feel loved, are really getting the resources that they need to successfully compete in an ever-changing world. Unless you're willing to ask those questions, you're not going to get new answers. The fifth key, become a student of possibility. Become a student of potentiality. Don't just allow yourself to get caught up in reading what everybody else in your industry reads or surround yourself with the same kind of people. You know something? One of my most valuable things that I do in my life that I love is the fact that Becky and I have such diverse friends. I mean, one of the times I had a really wonderful dinner at Thanksgiving, I'll never forget, we brought everybody in there together. They're all sitting down. There were 100 people at our house for dinner, and we're all looking around the room. And some of the people are people like Captain John, who works in the South Bronx for the Salvation Army. And we met him where we went out and fed some people on Thanksgiving one time years ago, and he's been a friend ever since. He's out there in the trenches turning things around. And then we have somebody else at the table, and he was the CEO of one of the major Fortune 500 companies. Then we had another good friend of mine who's a very famous actor. And then we had another guy who's a comedian. And we had a musician there. And then we had a few people that thought they were actors and musicians who aren't very good, right? That were just working at various normal kinds of jobs, doing normal kinds of everyday things, but they're really wonderful people. As I looked around the room and saw this diversity of people, and I got up to, you know, give our prayer and to say thanks, I said, you know, before I say anything else, I just want to say that I think God has an incredible sense of humor. Because look at the diversity of kinds of people he creates. But you know something? That has been one of the most valuable tools in my life. Because I don't get to just hear one point of view reinforced over and over and over again. I'm hearing so many different points of view, and that has helped me immensely to understand how people think. And I've had the privilege now of working with more than 500,000 people in seminars and private therapies and business environments all over North America and around the world. That diversity is invaluable, and you must go get that diversity. The fastest way to get it is you can go get it by reading. Because some of the most brilliant people in our culture have written books. And you know what? A lot of them don't agree with each other, which is fabulous. That's why I just got done reading these 10 books. Some of them contradict each other, which is wonderful, because then I get to decide what I believe and what makes sense to me, which allows me to make my own decisions, allows me to fail if I'm going to fail by my own conviction, or allows me to succeed by my ability to synthesize new possibilities. You've got to be a student of possibility. You've got to study technology. There's huge technological change that's going to change the way we educate ourselves. It's going to change the way we entertain ourselves. It's going to change the structure of how people experience reality. Everything from something as simple as CD-ROM and this overused word multimedia, where now you can get a CD-ROM that on this one CD-ROM you have a map of every city, street, town, every dirt road in the United States on one CD-ROM. Or compression technology, compression television is going to create so many choices of entertainment, so many different movies, so many different channels that will provide different kinds of education, different worldviews, different paradigms. If you watch the Discover Channel, you're going to get a different set of paradigms about life than, for example, if you watch MTV. I'm not saying either one is right, but if you continually have our world where we're all getting different input, we're going to find that our society becomes more fragmentized than ever before. All of these situations provide incredible opportunity. The opportunity to grow, the opportunity to understand, the opportunity to comfort people around you, the opportunity to create products or services or concepts that can enhance the quality of life for society, opportunity to do well financially, the opportunity to become more stimulated than any time in human history. These are the times that we live in. It's an incredible time. What else should you become a student of? Necessity. If you really want to be able to anticipate trends, you should become a student of necessity. What do people in society see as a necessity rather than an accessory? Because that drive, that demand of the large numbers of people in our society saying, we got to have something, puts mass number of people to work to focus on solving that problem. And when lots of people work on the problem and everybody wants it, we invariably tend to find a way to make it happen. The resources are there. I'll tell you what else you should be a student of. Consequences and inevitability. Certain things you know are inevitable. Certain things you know, if I do X, I know Y is going to happen. But most of us never really study consequences. We never look at, hey, if I make this decision and that decision, what's that going to mean to my life long term? Instead, we react. Let me tell you something. Again, reaction is not where you want to be. Reaction is the direct opposite of anticipation. Now, there's no doubt, and I still do this as well, there are going to be areas in your life where you react because you're not prepared. But you want to make those the exception instead of the rule. And I can tell you one of the ways to do that is really get sold on the limits of reaction. A lot of people say, well, I'll deal with it when it shows up. Well, let me give you a fun metaphor. One of the things we do at our mastery program is we teach people there a form of martial art where we show people how to be able to defend themselves against virtually any attacker. And the training we have, we bring in a master, and his number one organizing principle is, I don't teach any technique that someone can't master in 3 minutes. That's pretty intense. But his whole thing is, if you have to remember it, and it's really complex, and you've got to practice it for months or years to get it down, when all of a sudden you're surprised, and you're not anticipating it, and you get attacked in the real world in the street, some of these complex skills just go out the window. You can't remember them. Just like sometimes you can't remember your own telephone number or how to spell the word the, only there are bigger consequences than not knowing how to defend yourself. So he makes it simple. And by the way, he developed this because he trains Navy SEAL teams, and he also trains many of the law enforcement members from across the United States, including the Secret Service. What he found was that there is a reactionary gap. What that means specifically is, how is it that an officer gets attacked and somebody's just got a knife and he's got a gun and they're, you know, 10, 20 feet away and he's not able to defend himself in time? Because the person doing the attacking has the advantage of surprise. The officer was not anticipating them. And here are the physical facts. You might find this interesting. A grown man can travel 21 feet. Here they are, 21 feet away with a knife in their hand. They can travel at 21 feet in a second and a half to 2 seconds. Now think about that. It takes more time than it takes for you to recognize the pattern of what's going on. Oh, this guy's attacking me. Then formulate a plan. Then reach down and get your gun. And then pull it out and protect yourself. It's already over. And you know what? That's a great metaphor for what happens in life. See, if you were anticipating, you could deal with so many things so much more easily. It's not that you don't have the tools. It's not that you don't have the gun. It's that you're not anticipating and things strike you. This is why you've got to become a student of consequence, a student of inevitability. You must also become a student of pain, cultural pain, pain in relationships, pain within businesses. Because if you can find what the pain is, or the pain that's coming, and come up with a solution, a way to solve that pain, your future is assured. You will never have to worry about whether you have a career or not. You'll never have to worry, will you be able to succeed or not? Those who can solve problems, those who can eliminate pain, are those who are the leaders of our culture as a whole. They're the people who have the least pain in their life because they know what to do to protect themselves, and they have the most pleasure because they find solutions. Become a student of value. See, if you want to anticipate what people are going to want more of, if you're going to want to anticipate how to do well financially, if you're going to anticipate how to make yourself more valuable to a company, if you're going to anticipate what a man or woman would want in a relationship, you got to know what people value. And the more you understand what people value, the more power you have to anticipate what not only any individual, but what mass number of individuals are going to want. Becoming a student of value virtually ensures, if you act upon your understandings, that you will succeed in financial terms, you'll succeed in business terms, and you'll succeed in your personal life as well. It's your ability to anticipate what people value most and to meet those values that gives you the capacity to enjoy your life and do what you want to do when you want to do it in a way that empowers other people in the process. Listen, this is exactly what John Templeton has done. This guy is the number one money manager in the world since the 1950s. If you ask Sir John Templeton, what is the single most valuable skill that you developed in your lifetime? He says very simply this, what's made me successful is my ability to value what a company, product, or service is worth. That's it. He knows what it's really worth. So when everyone else gets emotional and they start buying something because everybody else is buying it and they get greedy, or they start selling it because everybody else is afraid, he looks at what it's really worth. You want to really anticipate? Become a student of value. There are major shifts going on in our society. What you've got to learn to do is be a leader by making your ability to anticipate one of your most valued assets. If you value it, if you constantly focus on it and improve on it, you will absolutely have the edge. And you'll have the edge in your company. You can have the edge in the quality of relationships. You can have the edge in how you raise your children. Because you'll be able to anticipate problems before they occur and solve them before they come up. That's powerful. In fact, in business, a good manager is somebody who can solve problems consistently. and they're able to do it no matter what. But that's reaction. A leader is someone who envisions potential challenges in advance and solves them. Anticipating trends in human desire and human behavior will also then give you peace of mind, because you won't be one of those people who lives in fear. You'll be living in a state of certainty, knowing that whatever comes up, you're prepared for it, and that preparation gives you the edge. So really, you have three choices. Either one, just wait for things to happen and try to react to them and lose the edge and experience lots of pain. Or two, anticipate changes and trends by noticing what's going on around you, becoming sensitive, making it a priority, and then, of course, utilize that information to improve the quality of your life. It is not enough just to anticipate. We're taking for granted one thing here. You realize you got to use your personal power. You got to utilize what you know to create some quality change. There is a third option, and that is not just notice trends, but to become a trend creator. Become a paradigm shifter rather than someone who just studies them. Now, how do you become a paradigm shifter? Well, first of all, you don't have to do that to succeed. But if you're the kind of person that wants to help shape what's happening in our society, one, understand what's going on around you, and two, develop or define a vision that inspires not only you, but the people around you. This is how you can begin to create a paradigm shift. This is what Bill Gates did when he was just this young kid that most people thought were crazy. He built a core team around him who shared his vision. This is what Tom Watson did to create IBM. And by the way, IBM is only here today because Tom Watson Jr. challenged his father's vision completely. He told his father that the paradigm was changing and that they had to shift to computers. They fought about it continuously. There was major upset. But in the end, his father listened. They changed their paradigm, and as they did so, they ensured their ability to become one of the most successful and profitable companies internationally. And by the way, they're under attack right now. Why? Because they haven't made a paradigm shift they probably need to make organizationally. The same level of thinking that's made IBM as successful as it is now slowing up its capacity to change quickly. They need to develop a new vision, a new set of rules, a new paradigm. So step number one to becoming a paradigm shifter, get clear on what is your vision, something that inspires you and people around you. The second key to being a paradigm shifter, again, is ask questions no one is asking. That's how you get new answers. Joel Barker, in his book, Future Vision, offers a question for people to ask. He says, ask yourself, what's currently impossible in my industry that if it was possible, it would change all the rules of the game? Asking that question might get you to anticipate something no one else has anticipated. I'm saying to you, ask the same question in your personal life. What's impossible in your life right now? What's impossible for you to do currently with your wife? What's impossible for you to do with your kids? And if it was possible, how would you go about doing it? If it was possible, how would it change the entire experience you have with your family? What's impossible to do with your physical body right now? And if it was possible, how would that change your whole life? And how would you go about doing it if it was possible? Asking this what-if type of question helps you to break out of the paradigm and start to create new paradigms. Here's the third key to being a paradigm shifter, not just an observer or utilizer, but someone who makes it happen. Step three, if it makes sense, then break the rules. If you see that your common sense says doing something completely different than anyone's ever tried it before might make sense, then by gosh, go do it. Break the rule. Make it happen. That's how most success happens in business. That's how most success happens in our world. When you start creating a path where a path never existed before, just remember this. Life rewards those who contribute on a massive scale. And you know what? If you are willing to challenge the paradigms that currently exist and bring an alternative that enhances the quality of life, and you're willing to stick with it till it comes to be, then all the pain will be worth it, because you'll have the pride of knowing that what you did has truly made a difference. Achieving your ultimate goal. So what is it? Have I gotten your curiosity? How could I possibly know what your ultimate goals are? How dare I even think this way? You know what? I think I can really say what it is. You might tell me that my ultimate goal is to make a huge difference in the world. My ultimate goal is to raise my children to be strong individuals and make a difference in their lives and people that they get to know and touch. You might say, no, my goal is to make $1 billion, $1 million, $100 million. No, my goal is just to be the best I am moment to moment. See, you might say my goal is to have a sailboat and go around the world. But the truth is, none of those are your ultimate goal. What are you doing it all for? Why are you working so hard to support your children and get them to be good people? Why are you really wanting to make a difference? Why do you want the sailboat? Why do you want the Jaguar or the Ferrari? Or why is it that you want to travel around the world? What's the sailboat for? What is all this stuff that's been driving you? What's really behind it all? And the answer, I believe, is there's only one goal you really have: to be happy. You really want, and you may word it differently than I'm using, you may not use the word happiness, but you want a consistent sense of pleasure within your being. And you know what? You deserve it. But there's a problem. The problem is that you and I have been conditioned. We've been conditioned in a variety of ways that keep us from really having the happiness that we pursue so heavily. It's right there within us right now. We don't have to do anything for it. And you and I know that intellectually, right? We go, yeah, I know I could be happy. So why aren't you? And you might say, well, I am happy. Are you happy all the time? I know I'm not, but I'm getting better because I'm beginning to learn how to take control of this thing between my ears. I'm learning how to direct and control my own mind. And the better I get at that, the happier I am. So I thought it might be nice for you and I to really talk about, what the heck is this thing called happiness? How do we get it? Or maybe better yet, how do we experience it more consistently? What prevents us and what can allow us to experience it more? What is happiness? It's feeling good. And we've all learned different ways to do it. Some of us have learned that what we need to do is go to school for 14 years and then get out in the marketplace and be a doctor or be a lawyer so that we can begin to feel good about ourselves so other people feel good about us. We've all been taught what has to happen first to be happy. But you know what? It's the emperor's new clothes. It's all a lie. Why do so many people drink alcohol to excess? Why do people smoke cigarettes? Why is cocaine the number one selling retail product in North America with over $100 billion in sales? These are all devices that people have learned to use to try and change the way they feel, to try and make themselves feel good, to feel happy. But the problem is none of them work long term. Even the highest high that a person can get from cocaine only lasts a short period of time. And the contrast when a person crashes to their normal state is intense. That's where the addiction comes from. And what we've got to learn to do is tap into the natural drug, if you will. Because it's not a drug. It's the natural source that's within every one of us at every moment of our life. We've got to stop buying into this false idea that something on the outside will ever make us happy, whether it be accomplishment or cocaine. Neither one's going to do it. Not long term. Plus, you cannot imagine the difference of joy that's inside of you if you just allow yourself to feel it. You can be happy right now. And if you doubt it, think about something. Have you ever seen a newborn baby? Have you ever seen them when they're not in physical pain? What are newborn babies like? They're happy about everything, aren't they? They're happy about the sky. They're happy about a smile. They're happy when they pass gas. When the people around them are happy, they go, isn't that cute? Look at this little baby. Oh, this is so cute. And we get happy about this stuff too. It's funny how human beings are. We think we're going to get the happiness on the outside, but where does it really come from? Yeah, you know, it's the inside. And nothing on the outside is ever going to give it long term. You say, yeah, but I made my $1 million and I felt happy. For how long? I did it too. It was kind of a neat feeling. But it wasn't what I thought it would be. And as soon as it was done, it was over. You know, you get a new relationship. You say, well, the relationship I'm in, that's not making me happy. I need a new relationship. And what happens? You're with this new person. Everything's great. You're so excited. You feel so close to them. You think about them constantly. You wake up thinking about them. You call them up in the middle of the night and say, gosh, you know, what you thinking of me? And they say, yes. And you feel so good. And how long does that last? Anywhere from 15 years to 15 minutes to 15 seconds. And all of a sudden it changes slightly. Because all the things that you're looking for on the outside only provide temporary feelings of joy. But you know what's exciting? Is inside of you at this moment as you listen to my voice. There's an unlimited sense of happiness and joy. It is your natural state. And it's the thing that you unleash, but you only unleash it when you meet the rules of your conditioning. What does it take for you to be happy? What really does it take for you to feel totally joyous inside? Will you be drunk with joy? Not with alcohol, with joy. Will you just feel incredible inside? What has to happen? What has to happen for you personally? Do you got to change the world? Do you got to just touch another person's life? Do you got to read a book? Do you got to watch a TV program? Do you got to listen to some music? Could you just feel it? See, when you listen to the music or you make a difference, in those moments, who creates that feeling inside of you? Isn't it really just you? That stuff's inside waiting to get out. But you have these rules about what has to happen. If X, Y, and Z occurs, then I can allow myself to feel good. What if you changed the rules and made happiness a natural way of living? I give you an example. I remember one time I was with my youngest son, Jarek, and we were in our car and the car broke down. And it was a hot day. And we were out in the San Gabriel Valley and it was smoggy and it was tough. And we were waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for a tow truck to come, and it didn't come. And so instead of being all angry and upset, I thought to myself, this is stupid. I'm with my son. I can have a wonderful time. And the experience transformed because I asked a better question. I said, what could I do right now that would create joy for Jarek and myself? And I began to focus on different things we could talk about, and it turned into this special moment that I won't forget for many, many years. And we had this incredible bond and love right there, just in that moment, sitting in this hot car on this smoggy day waiting for things to happen. I could have focused on we were waiting for it to happen and been upset, but instead I focused on what can we do right now to create more joy. And you know what? We get whatever we focus on. That's how powerful the human brain is. And what's interesting, though, is how my son interpreted it. I remember about a couple months later, we were talking about something else, and all of a sudden I knew he wanted some attention. He said, Dad, can we go sit in the car out in the sun? I thought, isn't that interesting? See, it's okay for us to say, well, a little kid doesn't know better, so they link up that the car is the source of that connection and happiness. But don't you and I do the same thing as adults? Don't we start thinking it's the education or the PhD or the car or the home or the income or the level of success in business or the quality of the article we write or whatever the case may be? Haven't we been seduced, at times at least? Maybe it's time we realize that it is the emperor's new clothes and that what we're doing is we're trying to cover up what's natural. That really our happiness is always there inside of us. And there's more of it there than you can ever get from something from the outside. So the question of this tape is, how do we achieve that ultimate goal? And by the way, you may be saying, well, this sounds really nice. You've been really nice and sensitive, and I like these kinds of feelings, but how is this going to help me in my job? How is this going to help me in my life? Life is a balance. I'm talking about having that balance. And I'll tell you, one of the most powerful changes that shifted my life, it's just an idea, but it's an idea that if you were to apply it, as simple as it is, if you were to actually live it, it could instantly change the quality of your life. And that idea is simply this. All of my life, I was conditioned to believe that if I achieved enough, if I helped enough people, if I did enough things, that I would be happy. So I was working very hard so I could achieve, so I could eventually be happy. And one day, I got this new concept in my head. What if I happily achieved? What if my goal was not to achieve, but my goal was to be happy? And that while I was happy, I was going to do things that contributed and made a difference, which will be great references for the power that I had when I unleashed and experienced the ultimate human emotion. I got to tell you what, the idea of putting happiness as higher on my list of values than achievement was a little scary for me at first. Because I thought, boy, if I feel happy, then I won't be driven to achieve. Maybe I won't want to work as hard. Maybe I won't help as many people. Maybe all these things that I identify with my life, maybe I won't have that same level of motivation. Maybe I got to keep achieving because that makes me, you know, a person who contributes. And then eventually I can be happy. I don't want to take that away because I'll lose my drive. I was wrong. I was scared, but I was wrong. What happened was when I finally decided I was going to be happy along the way, that life was not an outcome, that it was a process, that I would achieve things and say, is this all there is? Unless along the way I enjoyed the process, that I was going to spend more of my time in life in the process than I was achieving. And if I wanted to be happy more of the time, I got to get committed to that idea. The minute I started living that way, my life changed and I went to a whole new level. I thought I was successful before. I thought, boy, look, I got my act together. All I can tell you is I got a new level of depth. So how do we create this real balance? How can we take what we've talked about thus far in this tape and make it practical so you can really use it, so you can really experience more of this big promise I've been telling you about, of that joy inside of you that you know is there? Well, let me give you 8 points. Number one, we've already talked about. The first key to unleashing your happiness is to remember it's already there, to remember it's your natural state. I've said a zillion times in this tape, and it may sound redundant to you, but I'm a big believer that repetition is the mother of skill. We hear it enough, we may remember it. Just think about it. Think about what's inside of you. I think that most people's unhappiness, that really the root of all human misery is the ignorance of our true nature and power. That it's all inside of us, it's not on the outside. See, most of us have been conditioned to believe that being happy is difficult, instead of what's always there. See, I believe to be unhappy, you got to pervert your reality. Now, I've managed to pull this off in my own life as many times as I'm sure you have, but the reality of our existence is joy. In order to be unhappy, you got to develop false beliefs about what life is. You got to begin to believe that all these things have to occur for you to feel appreciative for this thing called life. That's crazy. And we've been sold and we've bought into that insane game. In fact, we've developed all these rules about all these different things that specifically have to occur at specific times and specific ways before we get to have those great feelings that we want inside. We begin to think that events are the source of our happiness, or that another person is the source of our happiness, or our kids are the source of our happiness, or our career is the source of our happiness. We start thinking we need another person to think that we can feel love inside of us, that it's coming from him or her, That's their enchanting words or those beloved whispers in our ears. That's what makes us feel really good. That's what makes us feel love. That's what makes us feel happy. But we seldom stop to really consider, what are those feelings of love or security or peace? Where are they coming from? When we feel them in that moment, where are they coming from? Are they like sneaking out of that person's lips or mouth and into our ear and into our body and make us feel good? Of course not. We're unleashing those within ourselves in that moment. But you know what happens is, we have a situation like this where we feel good for a moment because of something on the outside. We've met one of our rules, and we think that that's real happiness. And we've really got an infinite reservoir of joy that's deep inside of us that goes beyond anything you've ever felt before. And when something outside of us triggers it, it's usually like a little tiny trickle of joy that flows out. And what do we think? We go, boy, I'm so lucky that I have that person in my life, which you probably are, but that's not the source of your happiness. Because if that's the source of your happiness, what if that person never goes away? A little scary, huh? Or what if they pass away? Or what if something separates you at some time? You see, the fear that most people have in their lives of not being happy is because they think it's coming from the outside. They experience the object of their senses, and when they taste it, they think, boy, that joy is coming from that object, from that person, from that event. But in fact, we're only tasting our own inner feelings that are existing continuously. They're constant. And all that sweetness and all that love that you want so bad is flowing through your veins and your heart right now. There's a sea of real power inside of you. Everyone has this place inside of them, and all we've got to do is tap into it, touch it. But you can't do that as long as you believe happiness is on the outside. As long as you believe happiness is a reward. Happiness is not a reward. The reward is life itself. You've got the reward. Happiness is nothing but a state. Feeling good is a state of mind and emotion. And you can have it any moment simply by claiming it. How do you claim it? Two ways. One, change the way you're using your body. If you're not feeling happy right now, I guarantee you may be doing several things. One is you may not be breathing. Now you say, well, what are you talking about? I'm breathing. Sure you are. But are there times when like you're frustrated or you're angry or you're concerned? Does your breathing pattern change? I can guarantee it does. What about your facial expressions? See, if you change your facial expressions, you immediately change how you feel. Try this right now. No one's around. They're not noticing. Put a big, stupid, silly grin on your face. Oh, come on. Nobody's going to notice. If you're in your car, turn to some other person who's in the traffic and grin at them with a big, huge grin and watch what happens. They'll think you're on drugs. It's okay. Just go ahead and do it. Try it. Or just do it right now. Come on. Smile real big. And while you're doing this big smile on your face, thinking this is stupid and crazy, notice how you feel. See, you have 80 different muscles in your face. If you change the way you use them, you can make yourself feel happy. And I bet you already know the ways to do it. In fact, if I asked you to get depressed, you could pull that off, couldn't you? The point is simple. You can change the way you use your body and change your level of happiness. What else can you do? Well, let's go to step two of these eight or however many points I decide to make out of these. Number two is really simply this. Change your focus and you change your level of happiness. Remember, it's not only your physical body and your beliefs that determine how happy you are, but what are you focusing on? See, right now you could get totally depressed. How would you do it? Well, you could use your body in ways that make you feel depressed, but also you could do it just by focusing on things that don't make it feel good. You could feel sad or you could feel angry. Couldn't you think of people that have wronged you in your past? Focus on that enough that you really began to feel it again and feel real angry all over again, even though they're not here. If you really wanted it, couldn't you do that? Couldn't you feel really sad remembering things you missed out on? All you'd have to do is focus on them. What about joy? What about pleasure? What about ecstasy? Can you remember a time in your life when you were feeling feelings and emotions of absolute ecstasy? How good that really felt? Whatever it was. Could you go back to that time and remember it? Actually re-experience the feelings? Begin to breathe and feel the same way until you felt so good inside? Can you remember times when you felt totally loved? See, if you really want to be happy, you have to become good at what I call memory management. Memory management means if you're unhappy right now, it's because you're not controlling the focus of your mind. You're focusing on something that makes you feel lousy instead of something that makes you feel good. I mean, I'll give you an example. Let's say you're traveling in a wonderful place like New York City, which has all kinds of opportunities to show yourself how resourceful you really are and just getting across streets. And the bottom line is, let's say you step off the street corner and an ambulance comes by and almost hits you. Now, how are you going to feel? Well, it all depends on what you focus on. Some people freak out and get unbelievably angry. How dare they do that? How could they possibly do this? They don't even watch it. They're going to kill somebody. They could have killed me. Think of that. I could be in the hospital right now. I could be in the hospital. All my kids wouldn't have me take care of them. And then what would they do? And then I lose my job and they go on and on and on and on and on. Nothing's happened. Nothing has happened. But you know what? These people have not perfected their mind. They have not learned to take control of their mind. Their mind is controlling them. And if you don't control your mind has the capacity to think of every possibility undisciplined because of its cultural conditioning through television and schooling and advertising. The brain has learned to try and protect itself, and a lot of people's brains have learned to become incredibly skeptical, pessimistic, to find out what's wrong so they don't get disappointed. If you don't control your mind, it'll control you. You must control your focus. What could have happened in that same situation? You could have felt grateful. You could have felt good or happy. You could have said, wow, that thing almost hit me, but it didn't. That should have hit me, but it didn't. Somebody must be protecting me up there. Now, maybe that's true, maybe it's not, but it sure make you feel good if you looked at it that way. Or you might think, isn't that amazing how fast I am? I got off and I instantly reacted. That is hot. I think of where I could use that. I could chase down the man with my dreams with that kind of speed. You know, I could go out and make my job work better. I could be on a track team. See, it all depends on what you focus on. That's what's going to determine how you feel. Nothing more. Remember, nothing in life has any meaning except the meaning that you give it. And the meaning you give things is usually based on what you choose to focus on. So control your focus. Here's step 3 to happiness. Ask happy questions. Ask empowering questions. Now, if you spend any time with me, you know I talk all the time about physiology, changing focus, and on asking better questions. And the reason I talk about those is they are the fundamental control tools to your brain, your mind, and your emotions, and therefore the quality of your life. Questions you need to ask yourself when things come up is not, what does this mean? By the way, that's the natural question that comes up. Your brain is always trying to avoid pain and gain pleasure. It's the way you're wired. It's a survival instinct. Whenever you're going to go do something, your brain says, what does this mean? And what should I do? Is it going to mean pain or is it going to mean pleasure? Is it going to lead me toward more things that I want, or is it going to take me down a road I don't want to be in based on my past experience? And the bottom line is, in pursuit of what does this mean, we get to points where we're not sure what things are going to mean. So let's say you want to make an investment. Should I invest in a stock or not? Well, the brain's asking, what is it going to mean? If I invest in a stock, is it going to mean pleasure, i.e. profit, and I'm going to feel good and have more money and things will be nice? Or is it going to mean pain? I'm going to lose what I've got here, or it's not going to grow at all. But see, the problem is, if you ask what's this going to mean, it's very difficult to be certain, absolutely certain, which one it's going to lead to. And that's where people drive themselves a bit crazy. I'll give you an even more challenging situation. Sometimes you try and do everything right and things turn up wrong, and then try and figure out why they turned up wrong. Why is it you gave your all and it still didn't work, or somebody didn't acknowledge it, or didn't get supported, or there's an idea that's so useful, but no one will listen to you right now. Or you worked all night on a project, and then your dog ate it the next morning. If you ask questions like, what does this mean, you might come up with answers like, well, it's another example of me sabotaging myself. Maybe you're not sabotaging yourself. That makes you just feel bad about yourself. Maybe you just weren't smart. Maybe you let the dog eat your thing because you didn't put it on a higher shelf. Maybe you were just stupid. Maybe you weren't sabotaging. Look at it that way. See, we got to be careful about the meaning we give things by asking the question, what does this mean? A better question, how can I use this? How is this important in my life? What can I learn from this? These are the kinds of questions that will make you feel happier, that will make you feel good in your life, because ask and you shall receive. If you want a better quality of life, if you want more happiness, ask questions that lead you to a place where you feel better about yourself and your environment. I guarantee if you do not feel happy on a regular basis, it's because you've got a set of habitual questions you ask yourself, like, why does this always happen to me? Or why can't I pull this off? And again, if you say, why can't I? Your brain says, ask and you shall receive. Here's why you can't, because you're stupid and you're an idiot and you don't follow through. Because you sabotage. It'll come up with a reason whether it's true or not. So you got to take control of the question-asking process. So what am I really happy about in my life right now would be a good question. Now if your brain goes, nothing, the next question is, what could I be happy about if I wanted to be happy about something? What am I really enjoying in my life right now? What could I be excited about if I wanted to be excited? What's really wonderful in my life? What's great about this? What is working? See, these are questions that will really support you. And if you're in a lousy state, you don't ask questions like, how much longer will this last? Or, can I survive this? Can I survive this? Makes you doubt whether you can even make it through where you are. Those are disempowering questions. Instead, if you want to break out of that state, you might want to ask a question like, well, will this even matter 10 years from now? So that's key number 3. Ask effective questions. Control the focus of your mind by asking questions. The 4th key to experience consistent happiness, and boy, I'll tell you one, this is a big one. Learn to be a perceiver instead of a judger. What do I mean by that? Well, there's a problem with judging too quickly. And that is when you judge what things mean too quickly, oftentimes you feel pain about things you don't have to feel pain about. For example, you ever gotten upset about what you thought somebody said, and later on you find out that's not what they said or it's not what they meant, and you're all uptight about it because you felt that they had judged you, you had decided that's what things had meant. Later on you found out something differently, or maybe you had an experience like I've had. I felt like somebody was giving me the runaround one day, and everything I tried to accomplish, they seemed to get in my way of accomplishing it. I felt like they were trying to manipulate me. And I started to get kind of angry, quite honestly, inside, because I was like, man, I had judged these people are just trying to manipulate me. And sure enough, they got me to this place, and we walked in this building, and we turned on the lights, and it was a surprise birthday party. I had judged instead of allowing myself to perceive and wait and see what does this really mean. You and I empower our lives whenever we allow ourselves to have a new level of choice as to what things mean. I'll give you an example. Have you had a day in your life that you would look back on and would say, gosh, it was one of the worst days of my life. It was so frustrating, so angry. I was so hurt by that person. Don't we all have some place in our life that if I said, what was the ultimate, most painful experience of your life, you could remember it and go back to it if you really needed to. The question I have for you is, if you remembered a time like that, would it be fair to say that as you look back on it now, that the meaning is different than it was back then? That as you look back on it now, you may see, gosh, it was painful, but that pain kind of shaped a part of my life and has made me more sensitive to other people. Maybe you were abused as a child, and that sensitivity now makes you care more deeply for other people. It would make sure that you would never behave the way you were treated, as an example. Or maybe what happened is you had a painful experience in your life. At the end, you thought, man, that's the end. But as you look back on it now, it was really the beginning. That the reality is, if you look back on it now, it was so painful, it changed the direction of your life, and it's brought you to the place you are today. My point is, in your life, you're going to have good days and you're going to have bad days. But one thing is for absolutely certain. At the end of the day, you're not going to know which one they really are. Because some days you thought were your worst are going to turn out to be your best. So when you start judging at things being good or bad, soft or hard, the right or the wrong way to do something, maybe there isn't a right or a wrong way 100%. I'm not saying there aren't any rules. I'm just saying maybe we need to soften our view of life a little bit and give ourselves more space to learn and grow. That as we learn more about things, our view may change. But once we lock out that this is it, we stop our growth. See, knowledge is not power. Many times knowledge closes the door. It's like when you're a child, you know. It's like the door is open all the way up. You want to take everything in. But see, as you learn more and more, you begin to close the door more and more and more and more because you become more and more certain that you got the whole thing figured out. See, the thing we've got to discipline ourselves on is saying, hey, this feels right to me. I think I got it handled, and I'm open to learning more. It seems like this is true, but I always want to know that the meaning may change as I learn more about this person or this situation. Once we start judging a person as being wrong or right, or a situation as being wrong or right, we start to shut that door, and we take away our choice, and we take away some of our happiness. We distance ourselves from people, events, opportunities, and certain emotions. And we don't want to do that. We don't want to rob ourselves of that. See, you got to make sure that there are other meanings. And here's the question to ask yourself to release yourself from judgment. The question is simple. The question is there any other possible meaning that this could have? Or another question might be, what would be a better way of looking at this that would empower me and others? See, the only way you eventually master meaning is by mastering your mind. By realizing you determine the meaning that comes out of something. Nothing in life has any meaning except the meaning you give it. See, something isn't good or bad until you decide that's what it is. So you give it that label, and then it becomes a reality for you. And just remember this. The people that you may have once thought were successful may not have been successful at all for only one reason. They didn't master meaning. The John Belushis of the world were incredibly successful in getting other people to laugh. Obviously, he wasn't very good at getting himself to laugh at critical times. He didn't master the meaning of things. He created all the success around him as being something to feel bad about. That took effort. You got to work at that thing. And I'm not being mean about someone who's no longer here because I was a great fan of his. But clearly he didn't master his mind, and that's why he's no longer here. Elvis Presley had a similar problem. And we can go on and on down the list. In fact, personally, I believe that if you have success on the exterior but you're not happy in the interior, you're far from successful. We've got to create a meaning that gives us joy on the inside while we share that joy with others, where our life truly does make a difference, but we enjoy the process. Otherwise, we live the ultimate nightmare, not the ultimate dream. Principle number 5 to having consistent happiness is learning a little bit of how to use your brain instead of having it use you. And the way to utilize it is using a simple principle of human perception, and that is the principle of contrast. Contrast is an invaluable way to change the way you feel about virtually anything. It's something that got used on you when you were a kid. So you may have been complaining about something. You had this perception that you turned into a judgment. You were judging. Boy, I need some new shoes. I'm upset. How come all the other kids have new shoes and I don't have new shoes? And you went to your parents and said, I want some new shoes. And your mother said, look, don't you complain about not having new shoes. Look at these people over here. They don't have any feet. And you went, you got a point. Okay. I can understand that. They use a little contrast on you and they just shut you down your tracks. They totally change what things meant to you by giving you a new reference, a contrasting reference, if that makes sense to you. We need to learn to do this for ourselves. The bottom line is what looks like a problem may be an opportunity, but you got to use contrast to your advantage. Here's number six. Number six key to achieving your ultimate goal on a regular basis, that is happiness, is very simple. Soften your rules. What do I mean by that? Well, you and I have talked about it, and I've alluded to it at least throughout this tape. We have developed a set of rules about what has to happen before we can feel good and have this experience called happiness. And unfortunately for many of us, we have very intense rules. That is, we have 80 things that have to occur before we can finally be happy. Everything has to be in place. For example, today's woman, quote unquote. What does she have to do to be happy? Well, she has to be superwoman. She has to take unbelievable care of her husband. She's got to take unbelievable care of herself. She's got to take unbelievable care of her kids. She's got to be a great businesswoman and career-oriented person. She's got to make sure she comes home and that everybody's fed and everybody's nurtured and everybody's supported. And then she's got to be a great lover for her husband, and she's probably exhausted. See, the bottom line is today's woman's been conditioned. You've got to be perfect. You've got to be all these things in order to feel fulfilled. With that many rules, with that many things having to be perfect for a person to feel fulfilled, they set themselves up for tremendous pain. Because it's going to be so hard to be perfect in all those areas all simultaneously. I don't know how today's woman can do it, much less today's man. He's got all his rules, too, that have been conditioned into him. I know they vary from person to person. I was talking to a gentleman who's a big oil man. For him to feel successful, he has to have net available to invest in liquid assets for him on a consistent basis, $20 million. Now, think about that. That might create a little stress in your life. You know, that might be a little difficult for you to meet, especially if the most you've ever had liquid was $10 million. It'd be even worse, I guess, if you only had $10,000. But the point is, most of us have set ourselves up for failure, and some of us have rules that are impossible to meet. I can tell you time and time again, when I talk to people that truly are happy, one of the major reasons is they got rules like, in order to be happy, I have to wake up. Or people say things like, every day above ground is a great day. How do I know if I'm happy or not? How do I know if I'm successful? If I wake up and look that I'm above ground, then I'm successful. See, what a lot of us have done is we've set up where 50 things all have to be happening simultaneously for us to feel good and be happy. But if just one's out of alignment, boy, do we get upset. In fact, have you ever noticed how things can be really great in your life? And then one thing, just one thing, can be out of alignment. And all of a sudden, your whole focus goes there and your mind goes crazy. You start getting all upset and everything else when everything else in your life could be in great shape. We need to remind ourselves that if we got one thing going on well, things are going well. And the reality is, if you look at your life, how many things really are going well in your life if you were being honest with yourself? If you weren't judging by these unbelievable standards where everything has to be perfect simultaneously, where you were the ultimate man, the ultimate woman, the ultimate performer, the ultimate career person, how many things are really going well if you focused on them? But see, what we've got to do is we've got to make it so we have more ways to feel happy and less ways to feel unhappy. That's the bottom line. Point number seven. If you really want to be happy, use happy words to describe the way you're feeling on a consistent basis. Develop a habitual vocabulary that is filled with words that create pleasurable emotion within you. We have a lot more words that describe negative emotions than we do positive, and so we tend to use them more often sometimes. Anytime you're unhappy, I guarantee you, you're putting a word on your experience, a word that creates a judgment about it that is negative, that creates a negative emotion or feeling. So let me just offer you some words that are enjoyment or pleasure-oriented. Happiness-oriented. Here they are. Enjoyment, euphoria, a sense of well-being, a sense of contentment, ease, comfort, coziness, gratification, satisfaction, luxury, to relish something, to feel a zest for something, sweetness, entertainment, happiness, gladness, delight, delection, joy, joyfulness, cheer, cheerfulness, exaltation, exuberance, glee, sunshine, overjoyed, intoxicated, rapture, jubilation, celebration, gladdened, feasted, heartwarmed, fascinated, captivated, enthralled, enchanted, tickled, thrilled, beaming, basking in, starry-eyed, glowing, radiant. Those are just a few. What if when somebody said, how's it going? You said things different than, okay, doing all right, surviving, hanging tough. If you were to use those kinds of phrases to describe how you're feeling, what you do is you immediately denigrate your experience. You lower the level of enjoyment you have by the words that you're using. Amplify your emotion by using new labels. If you're going to judge instead of perceive, why not judge by putting labels on your experience that make you feel great instead of words that make you feel lousy? It's a very simple thing, and it may sound so simple you may not do it. So think about it. If when you felt pretty good, you said, I'm feeling excellent, I'm feeling outrageous, I'm feeling fabulous, If you kept saying that on a regular basis, would you not begin to feel that way rather than if you said, I'm doing okay, fair to middling? See, think about it. When you begin to use those phrases, you have to change your emotional state. You may be feeling great, but you say, I'm feeling okay out of habit, and pretty soon you don't feel as good as you could have. Pay attention to the vocabulary you use consistently. You want to be happier? Build up a vocabulary. Write down some words that you're going to use. Maybe some of the ones I just dropped on you to make yourself feel great. Or if you really want to feel like heck, here, I can offer you some words to use on a regular basis. Talk about how unpleasing things are to you, or displeasing, or disagreeable, or undesirable, or unappealing, or unattractive, or unengaging, or uninviting, or distasteful, or unsavory, or unpalatable, or ugly, or offensive, or objectionable, or repugnant, or contrary to your feelings, or repulsive, or vile, or nasty, or noxious, or rotten, or putrid. How's your life? How you doing today? Putrid. Think of how you'd feel if you did that. Horrible, horrid, atrocious, atrocity, hideous, terrible, awful, dire, hostile, antagonistic, averse, unfriendly, uncared for, unvalued, unprized, despised, lowly, unpopular, out of favor, misunderstood, misprized, unbeloved, uncherished, loveless, forsaken, rejected, jilted, thrown over, spurned. If you really want to feel bad, just pick from that list and use those kinds of words to describe your life, your relationship, your business on a regular basis. I guarantee no problem, you'll be depressed in a short period of time. See, if you want to change your life, change your habitual vocabulary. Do it now. Simple step, write down a couple of words you use on a regular basis to describe how you're feeling that make you feel even worse than you really were feeling. And then decide you're not going to use the words to describe yourself or how you're feeling for the next 30 days. Sound like a deal? Just try it and see what happens. And in their place, write down the words that you want to use on a regular basis to describe how you're feeling, how you're doing in your life. And make sure they're words that amplify the positive emotion. That's point 7. Here's our final point. We'll wrap up. Point number 8 on how to achieve your ultimate goal, happiness on a consistent basis. It's very simple. Hold yourself to a new standard. So wait a second. I thought you said make my rules easier. You're right, I did, except there's got to be a new standard in your life, and your new standard is simply this. You adopt a belief that not to be happy is to be a failure. And for those of you who are motivated to succeed, this ought to really do it to you. What I mean is most people do not make happiness a big enough priority. If you decide right now that being happy is the only real success, then I suggest that you'll achieve it, because we always get what we focus on, as we talked about earlier. We've got to make sure, though, that we must be happy, not that we should be happy, not that we could be happy, that it's really a must, that's something that must happen, that you must do it, not the outside environment, not your brother, your sister, your friends, your neighbors, your boss, but you, and that you can do it. If you really adopt that core belief and you measure on a regular basis saying, hey, I got to be happy, that's the way I got to live, otherwise I'm being abusive to life, otherwise I'm giving a slap in the face to my creator. What if you really looked at life that way? That not to enjoy the gifts that have been given you would be the ultimate blasphemy. All I've tried to do in this tape is get you to think at a new level, get you to focus on the possibility of swinging the pendulum where you spend a lot more time in the happiness mode and a lot less in the pain mode. And certainly you deserve that. You know what else is exciting about knowing that you can be happy at any moment? It also relieves you of the burden of trying to make everybody else happy. Now, I know you still do it because you care about people. I do too. But the reality is when you realize that you don't have to do anything for yourself to be happy in a moment, then you also begin to realize other people don't have to do anything either. They can be happy right now. You can stop trying to make everyone happy, which probably drives you crazy because you can never do it successfully. You might for the moment get someone to be happy. The only way they're going to be happy long term is when they claim their real power and when they stop buying into the lie that something outside them controls them. When they realize that the only reason they don't have the joy that they want is they've not claimed it. And I'm not saying in this tape program, by the way, that the whole purpose is just to go out and bliss out and be by yourself and feel good, because you and I live in a Western culture. And as I've said many times, if you just sit in a Western culture and just bliss out and feel good, somebody will come and take your furniture. So you got to do more than that. You do have to be active. But I'll tell you, my idea of success has changed throughout the years. Growing up poor, I thought it was money. Then I realized it certainly isn't money. It's contributing to other people. Then I contribute to other people, and I thought, gosh, that's not it either. I still don't feel fulfilled. I feel good about myself. I'm proud, but that doesn't make me feel totally fulfilled, because here I'm achieving and helping others, but I'm not feeling as happy as I could. I'm burning myself out. And what I look for in life is the balance. And I now have a new definition of success, and it's how I measure myself, and it's how I encourage others who ask me how to measure their own success. And the measure I have is a two-step process. Number one, how happy are you? And the bottom line is, if you're not happy with how happy you are, you can change that. You can do it in a moment. You can change the way you're breathing. You ask yourself a great question. You can focus on what's great in your life. You can use some contrast. There's so many tools you've got in this set of tapes. One of them alone could work. You don't have to use them all. You don't have to go through 8 steps to make it work. I said, but number 2 is, how happy are the people who are around you? See, because there was a time in my life when I had a standard only for my own happiness. And so I was happy, but nobody else knew it. They weren't happy being around me. So I made the distinction that I don't want to just be happy, I want to be cheerful. What cheerfulness really means to me is that you're so happy on the inside that you also express it on the outside so it affects the people around you. And so I guess my new definition of success is real simple. It's, am I living a life where I'm experiencing more and more pleasure and less pain? And in the process of living it, is the way I'm living it creating more and more pleasure for others and less pain for them? If I'm feeling better and better all the time, and I can get other people around me to feel better and better, if I can feel less pain, they can feel less pain, if we can continue to expand in that direction, I think there's a reason why our brain wants to move towards pleasure. It's because it leads us to a place where we're really connected with our Creator. That may sound weird to you, but I think there's a reason why human beings are wired the way they're wired. And I think the easiest way to get to your Creator, the easiest way to have that joy, is to know that those feelings are available now. And to hold yourself to a standard where you cause yourself to feel them on a regular basis. Not because you have to, but because you deserve to. But you got to hold the standard. So in summary, what have we said? Well, we've said a lot of things in this tape. But I guess the most important thing we've said is, whether you're happy or not is not a question of whether the happiness is there. It's there inside of you. At levels of intensity and of depths you've never dreamed of. But you got to open the spout. You got to let what's in you out. And you got to realize that you're really the source. You got to remember there's nothing outside of you that's going to create it for you. And that the only way to really have this ongoing happiness is to change your focus, to change some of your core beliefs, to realize you don't have to do anything to be happy. You don't have to be responsible to something to be happy. You don't have to achieve to be happy that you can happily achieve. You don't have to choose between the two. You don't have to give up being an achiever and a doer and a person that makes things happen and just be somebody who just blisses out. You can bliss out while you work. What a concept. You can feel so good while you make that difference with your children. You can feel so good while you build your empire that you don't have to wait to feel good. And then if you feel good along the way, you're liable to build the empire bigger. You're liable to have a better impact on your kids and maybe a better role model for them as well. Maybe the whole message of this whole tape is just to remind you that the only way you achieve your ultimate goal of happiness is by perfecting your mind, by taking control, by mastering it. And God forbid, if you were to start developing this kind of habit, will you feel good on a consistent basis? Because if you really start feeling good, you know what happens? This stuff is catchy. It's like a disease. It spreads to all the people within your sphere of influence. And all of a sudden, they're starting to feel good. And pretty soon, you become rather successful because you're experiencing tons of pleasure and very little pain. And the people around you are impacted by the way you live, and they start feeling better too. What a terrible world if we all did this on a consistent basis. Of course, we all know that's impossible. We know it couldn't feel good on a consistent basis, but what if we were wrong? Have you ever been wrong about what you're really capable of, and then you were pretty pleased to find out you were better than you thought you were? I think you and I, every day, begin to find out we're much more than we thought we were. We're much more than our physical body. We're much more than we ever dreamed was possible. Maybe just this physical body and this thing you call yourself is just a vehicle, and there's a flame burning inside, that spirit of who you really are, which is greater than anything you've dreamed of. But I think the only time you really get in touch with that part of you is when you're feeling happy, when you're feeling that base level of joy, and you can have it right now. So claim your real power and achieve your ultimate goal today, and then do it again tomorrow and the next day and the next day. Don't make it something you reach for. Make it something you experience. Make it the way you live. So my challenge to you until we meet again is to remember, the world is as you see it. It's your mind, not the world, that's the source of all your experience. If you don't like what you're experiencing, change what you're doing inside your head. Take control. And until I visit with you again, remember, live with power.